helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast.
Well, welcome to another episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. I'm Bill Reichard, National Director for CMDA's Campus and Community Ministries here at CMDA. And my guest today is Dr. Linda Seaman. Doctor, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Linda, let me give everybody a quick kind of bio. I'm going to cherry pick. I'm going to encourage people to look at the bio on the show notes when they are listening and watching this podcast, because it is truly amazing the things that God has taken you through. But let me just cherry pick some of the highlights of your bio, introducing you to those listening today. Dr. Seaman is a triple board certified physician. You did your undergraduate at Vanderbilt, did graduate medical education in Lexington, Kentucky. Went to the West Coast, relocated there, where you trained in family medicine with a surgical focus at UCLA. And then with your husband, who's an ER doc, moved to Eastern rural Washington as newlyweds, where you raised your one daughter, balancing work in the ER and family practice as long, alongside political involvement and homeschooling. Currently, Linda, you are an adjunct faculty for Pacific Northwest Health Sciences University Osteopathic Medical School. And Linda, you serve as the campus advisor for our CMDA chapter there at WU. Educating and preparing students for real life encounters led to what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to talk about something that we haven't talked about on this podcast before, and that is contracts. Something that we know that the trainees or students and residents are going to be facing. First of all, let me ask you, why you've had some experience talking to students at the chapter at the school on this issue. How did this subject come up? How did this all start?
I think it started because the era of PNWU becoming, you know, present in Yakima was kind of a dicey time for physicians, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Many independent practices were struggling, in not only so hospitals either bought them out or corporations were taking mm-hmm. them over. That's a huge paradigm shift for a physician. Mm-hmm. Most physicians I've met in my career, we're pretty independent.
Right.
We work hard, we struggle hard, we risk take, and we're independent.
Yeah.
So to try to mesh with a corporate mentality was not easy.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the topic of contracts became more real to me and my mm-hmm. colleagues, and therefore in our CMDA Valley chapter in Yakima, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things we had to all go through was mm-hmm. this transition. And so we thought, you know, our job as campus advisors is to help prepare students. We didn't know anything about it. How could they?
So, right.
That's how it kind of got started.
Well, so. You're right. The landscape of healthcare has definitely dramatically changed. And so these issues are now more front and center than ever. When would you say that trainees begin to have to engage with contracts? When does that first begin?
I think realistically, the concept becomes in your face when you finish your residency. Mm. You have to then get a job, a real job, and you have to focus on looking and reviewing contracts and signing them mm-hmm. and committing. So I'd say those contracts are kind of there in your graduate medical education, but mm-hmm. you don't really pay attention to them. You just really want to go ahead and get your learning done, and mm-hmm. you expect that those guiding you are going to have your best interest in mind.
Yeah.
So, but when you go out and get a job, you now are making huge life choices.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, residency, you're just matching, you're happy to match, and you proceed forward. There's really probably no negotiation up until the point that you are now going to be employed. Well, let's just talk about this topic in the negative a bit. What are some of the pitfalls and challenges that you've seen people succumb to, fall prey to, that had they known they would have done something differently? What are some of the common errors or troubles that people find themselves in when they don't review and understand contracts?
I'd say there's three that come to mind. One is your compensation is not just whatever salary they bring up to you. Mm-hmm. Your compensation is, you know, all the benefits, all the perks, all the RVUs. Well, what's an RVU? They don't even know. And so the whole benefit package, when you're discussing corporation or employment, is really huge. Things like, when does the contract actually end, and when do I get reevaluated? Can I negotiate a higher baseline salary? What's going to take away from my salary? I was shocked when there was, you know, scuttlebutt in this community when the corporations were saying, well, if you as a practicing physician in our clinic don't order enough tests to help, you know, offload the all the departments that make medicine run, we might deduct from your salary. And I was like, no way, that's unethical. Yeah, you know, things like that. Mm. So I think understanding what goes into the entire benefit, the entire compensation package, is very poor by most young physicians. The other big one, and this did come back to me, I recently reviewed a student who's finished out practicing, did an OB fellowship and was getting his first job. And he wrote back and he said, thank you for telling me to ask about the tail coverage. And tail coverage is part of malpractice. Mm-hmm. So if you get your malpractice, you're covered, you're happy. Mm. On the other hand, two things that you don't realize. One is you're actually paying for it. It comes out of your salary. Mm-hmm. It's not just given to you. But number two, most of them are claims made. So while you're employed, you end up getting malpractice coverage if a case would occur. Mm-hmm. But if you leave and change where you work or the corporation, who's gonna cover you when you're with a new person, a new clinic, and you've got malpractice coverage with a different carrier? And that's called tail coverage. Somebody pays for that, and it follows you then. Your malpractice follows you for the rest of your career if it's paid for the time you were employed with this other organization. And that can be tens of thousands of dollars. And that's a big surprise if you don't know about that and didn't talk about that ahead of time, that the corporation will purchase that for you.
Okay.
That's a really big one. And then the third one that comes to mind, just these are the things that I know are real stressful for physicians, is the call. I know two or three, unfortunately, OB, you know, working, happy, enjoying their practice. One of their colleagues leaves, and OB's very labor intensive, you know, for night coverage and being on call. So one of your colleagues decides to move, and you haven't addressed in your contract, who's going to pick up the slack?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they think you are, and the contract usually says you are, unless you are proactive about saying, okay, how many hours do I work? How much call do I really have to take? And what's your obligation, the hiring agency, the corporation, to provide coverage for a missing person in a call group? Mm-hmm. That's huge when it comes to any specialty, but certainly for OB, colleagues who moved and they picked up the slack. And they ended up quitting. They got burned out because you know, a year later, there still wasn't a person covered for them. And so instead of a 5-person rotation, it'd been a 4 and then maybe even a 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's unsustainable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are huge life stressors and big hits. It's very traumatic if
yes.
something like that happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, so it's important to be looking at the things in the contract.
Correct.
But are there things, too, that don't necessarily show up in a contract, but that as maybe a potential employee should be asking about, maybe things that policies of certain types that you should be looking at and other things? What are some things like that that you might need to be asking for, making sure that you're looking at those as well?
Well, I think policies always brings up what I perceive to be the rights of conscience, which I think CMDA members are very in touch with. However, you might sign a policy and take, you know, by joining the medical staff, for example, at a hospital, you might have to show up and participate in certain activities you don't wish to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you do have to be proactive about asking about, because it's not going to jump out at you.
Mm-hmm.
I think room for growth, you know, is there room for you to grow? I have another colleague, just a wonderful, altruistic, hardworking gal. She put her heart and soul into trying to make improvements and help this huge, it was a community health clinic agency, and she put her heart and soul into trying to make things better, improve. They made her the medical director. Well, she realized after about 3 years of hard work that this wasn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. She could be this in name. She could have these suggestions, but her ability to change the policy wasn't there. She was at the table, which was good. But she realized she couldn't practice medicine the way she really wanted to. She had reached her maximum contribution level, if you will. And administrators have a different take. They really do. Mm-hmm. They are looking at the bottom line. They are, you unfortunately start to feel sometimes like you're just a cog in the wheel trying to make money for the mothership. And that's not a good feeling for a professional.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more of this story. The Student Pulse podcast returns in just a moment.
Christian healthcare professionals are often faced with defending unpopular and controversial medical positions in today's increasingly secular world. I'm Dr. Jeff Barrows, and I've created a curriculum that will help Christian healthcare professionals speak the truth in love to their friends and colleagues regarding issues like abortion, participation in sex-rejecting medical care, assisted suicide, and conscientious refusal of objectionable procedures. The Standing Strong in Practice curriculum is a set of 6 videos lasting between 20 and 25 minutes that coaches Christian healthcare professionals to discuss these topics from a Christian worldview, and it's available to all members of CMDA on our website.
So as we've been starting to discuss, you know, knowing before you sign a contract, but how are these contracts dealt with? Are they ironclad in that you know, you just have to decide whether or not you're going to agree or not to agree to the terms of the contract, or is there some kind of level of leverage in terms of negotiation? How much can an individual negotiate on their contracts?
Well, I think that's super important. I think physicians need to know they are the asset. They are the person. You are the person doing the work, and therefore you have a lot of clout, if you will. There are a few things, in my opinion, that are probably not negotiable.
Okay.
Mostly they're things like legal terms, you know, indemnification clauses, things that I'm not an expert, and I'm certainly not a lawyer, but there's that kind of stuff just always is in those contracts. But pretty much, I took the attitude as I navigated my career and had to take on different hats in different organizations, that pretty much everything was negotiable. Price, call, paid, is call paid or unpaid? The time people spend clicking away at their EMRs, is that paid for? Or is that volunteer, you know? And, you know, they wanted, I asked one, I'll tell you, one story blew me away. I talked to the administrator as I was negotiating, renegotiating a contract. And I said, you know I have, in the ER, I could see five patients an hour. I was highly efficient. I was in occupational medicine now for the tail end of my career. And I said, you know, this is tough. There's all these forms to fill out. I mean, so many forms. No wonder people don't want to take on LNI. I said, so I either need a scribe or I need to be compensated for all the time I'm taking to fill out these forms. I can see my patient in 20, 30 minutes and do a great job and be done. But I spend a good hour sometimes filling out these forms. Well, then, you know, the comment was, well, maybe you need a scribe. And I said, well, I've never had a scribe, but seems like it's a good idea. A lot of people like them, especially in the emergency room. And then he said, well, you just hire yourself one. And I said, oh, you want me to pay for my own scribe? Well, of course, it's going to be your scribe. I looked at him and I just said, you got to be kidding. You're mandating that I, out of my own pocket, hire this scribe. Well, you're going to train him, aren't you? Well, of course I'm going to train him. But the scribe works for you. You know, he's working for me through you. And I said, that's going to take a big chunk out of my salary. Anyway, it was just one of those aha moments.
That's a tough option. Either you work for free, give that extra time, or you pay out of pocket. So you pay the money, but not the time. It's
to be more efficient. And you know what? Physicians never asked for these electronic medical records. They just came. And I think they're great. They do document well. There's better platform coverage, you know, that you can see over the interface of different aspects of patients' care. But there's a lot of problems inherent in them. And the time that physicians have put in to be secretaries is often not compensated unless you bring it up. So your administrative role, you're volunteering, quote unquote, for committees, that your CQI work, all of that should be thought through, because it impacts your work-life balance. All of a sudden, a 40-hour week is truly a 60 or more hour week, and you're taking work home. And you know what? I don't think that's the best interest for. That's why we have some burnout.
Yes, indeed. Contracts, are they, how long are they typically in force? Is there a typical amount of time? Are they renegotiated every year? Or, like, especially if you find yourself bound to a contract that you might have some regrets over, how long is that contract likely to stay in force?
Well, normally I recommend, this is not, again, this is proactive. I recommend that the first, at least 6 months, maybe the first year, is probationary, and it works both ways. That if it's not a good fit for me, I need to be able to exit. They, of course, want that if they don't think you're a good fit. But I think it works both ways. So I think agreeing to a mandatory time, and I'd say a year, is pretty good time to know if there's a good fit or not. There are automatic clauses often put into contracts where they'll automatically renew, and usually that's every 3 years. So, but what's not included is the contract will renew, but are you going to be guaranteed a scheduled time to renegotiate your salary, your time, the balance in your schedule, all of that? So I think physicians need to be aware that when you have those auto-renew clauses, that you need to plug into their time to either meet with your administrator and sometimes maybe your HR person, two meetings, because HR people know the benefits and all that's available there. And the administrators are more concerned about the clinical activity. Mm-hmm. So both of those are different. So that's what I recommend, a year. Yeah. And then after that, if you're happy and you're liking the community, then every 3 years. But schedule the time to meet and renegotiate as well.
Okay.
People forget to do that.
Yeah.
They get busy and it automatically renews. And then they're like, wait a minute. You know, I'm doing this now, or I'm not doing this. And maybe what could I do that would make maybe my life better? What committee could I be a part of? You know, things like that.
Indeed. So. Well, it just kind of makes me think, Linda, that this is more than just that the average person, let alone even the average physician, can really stay ahead of and stay on top of. Mm-hmm. So I guess to that point, how often do physicians call upon lawyers to review? And if so, do you see that as pretty much a standard practice, a lawyer reviewing these contracts for physicians?
Yeah, I think the good news, so to answer your question, yes. Hmm. Either a lawyer who is expert in physician contracts.
Hmm.
That's different than a general contract lawyer, honestly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What we do in medicine is unique and multi-level, multitasking kind of thing. There are a few agencies, companies. There's one that I know that physicians have created. Mm. They take on your they'll take your contract, review it, give you feedback, and then let you take that, and they'll kind of guide you through. It's almost a coaching kind of relationship. I think a review, the money you put into a good review by someone experienced in medicine is going to be worth your time.
Mm.
So I think the good news too is that physicians are bright, and we do think we can learn, and we can. We can learn everything if we wanted. But how do you become the expert for?
Exactly.
I remember starting a financial planning course one time, and I thought, what are you doing? Yeah. Why don't you just get a financial planner? So you know what I mean? But, you know, we do like to be educated, which is a good thing. But I recommend a good expert contract reviewer. And I also think that the more you read, the better. Most of the academies, family practice, ER, they all have very good literature in their journals and in their resources for the basics, just to get the lingo down, things to look for, things that are negotiable, things that are not negotiable typically.
Well, that's what we discovered that you yourself were doing as a kindness to some of the folks in Yakima. You've looked at contracts and given some advice or just kind of point some things out, which has been, I know, a great resource to a bunch of the trainees. And so grateful for the work you've put into it to kind of help. And of course, when necessary, point people to some good resources out there as well. But I think just making just an overall awareness for students and residents to know that this is something that they don't want to be surprised by. They really do need to be thinking in advance that, okay, how are they going to approach this and take it seriously and not be cavalier about it. So,
yeah. One other important thing I want to mention is the non-compete clauses. That's a big deal in contracts. Personally, I would never sign a contract with a no-compete clause. And that's because I wasn't a full-time physician at one location. I always had several part-time, you know, endeavors going on. And some states they're illegal, but many states they still put them in, and that can ruin your life. You know, if you've bought a home and you've got a family, and all of a sudden you get terminated for cause or no cause, and you've got a non-compete clause, that can be negotiated at the beginning, but not at the time. Well, it could be negotiated at the time as well, but it's better in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that means that, you know, what that is it says you we don't want you to steal all our patients right. that you've been taking care of. And you can't work closer than, you know, 50 miles from Yakima now. And that's a big problem yeah. if you've got a family and a community built here. So yeah. non-compete clauses are real important to think, dice through the details. Either get rid of it or yeah. Make sure that it's something that's very short term, the closer the better. Maybe it's negotiable at the time of termination that you can do a buyout, you know, for not much money, all of that. And I think making sure the administrators honor your patients. I've seen physicians leave town and nobody knows. They're just gone. You know, and I think honoring your patients by giving them notice that Dr. So-and-so is going to be moving and we're going to reassign you or this is your new doctor. I think those are common courtesies that sometimes I see that the administrations and corporations don't pay attention to.
Stay tuned for more of this story. The Student Pulse podcast returns in just a moment. Hey, students and professionals, now is the time to register for the 2027 CMDA National Convention, happening April 29th to May 2nd in the Cincinnati area. Right now, we are offering the absolute lowest prices for registration you will see all year, so take advantage of the deep discounts while they are available. If you joined us already this year, you know this event is a fantastic opportunity to meet healthcare professionals from all over the world, to refresh your mind, to worship alongside like-minded Christian brothers and sisters, and to restore your faith. Join us in Cincinnati next spring. Register now at natcon.cmda.org.
Well, this has been very helpful. Is there anything that I failed to mention or ask about that? I know you just mentioned non-compete. Was there, I know we could, I'm sure there's a, we could do even a deeper dive on this issue, as I'm sure there's a lot of variety and complexity, but anything else you'd like to speak on contracts? And then lastly, I want to make sure that if you've got a special word for our trainees as they kind of consider contracts and being vigilant in looking at them and reviewing them before they sign them as something that they, you know, they can walk away with. So any things that we haven't discussed that you think would be important to, and then any last words for our trainees?
Well, I do think that there's been two physicians that have gone through the medical school here. Mm-hmm. I'll mention things they've mentioned to me.
Okay.
One is a benefit of relocation costs. That's a negotiable item, a benefit. And I remember the young physician saying, well, they wanted to pay me back, but they wanted to pay me back over time in my contract over a year. And then if I didn't stay a year, they were going to renege on that reimbursement. And it was he just shook his head and he goes, I needed the money now because I needed to move. And the point was that didn't even make sense to him. So he said, I'm going to ask him for the money now and for it to not be ever taken back under any circumstance. And of course they agreed. And you know, they want you to come, but you know, they build in these contracts sometimes language that defers costs and creates problems. So I had another student who recently is doing a fellowship done with her training, and she has committed to some other Christian endeavors, and she wanted to do some volunteer moonlighting. And she had to go to the fellowship. It was a big deal for her to request to moonlight because when you are under a training contract, you're under their control. But it's negotiable.
Okay.
And I guess one of my take homes is, You know, I feel everything is potentially negotiable, especially the ones that are big ticket items have to be, you know, attended to. So your benefits, you know, health benefits, disability, all that, that's kind of boilerplate. That's for everybody, not just you, but the hospital. But things like relocation cost, your baseline salary, do your homework, know what you're supposed to be paid. And the MGMA has this information, but you have to be a member to get it. So you have to like work within your networks to find out what the compensation is for your area. I had a personal experience where I was moonlighting in the emergency room there in this town, and I was offered $50 less per hour than a male colleague. And I remember looking at the medical director and saying, well, I know that so-and-so is getting this much. Why would you pay me this? He got so red in the face, you couldn't believe it, and said, well, that kind of makes me uncomfortable. And I said, well, that makes two of us. Anyway, but that was early on. But that's to say that, you know, even gender issues are still alive and well, despite the best of training.
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of also kind of addresses the issue. It's not the time to be embarrassed to talk about money and compensation. I mean, these are the times when we're dealing with contracts to make it clear. Better to make it clear than to have those regrets or resentments down the road because you didn't.
Exactly. Yeah. So take homes would be do your homework. Have the attitude that pretty much, you know, anything regarding your compensation, your lifestyle, all that is negotiable, and make sure you factor in a follow up to readdress that. You know, every year, every whatever, every 1 to 3 years. And then the biggies, obviously, are make sure your malpractice is covered, because it is no fun to go through a lawsuit. And anybody who's ever had to deal with that and their family. So you want to make sure your coverage is bomb proof wherever you go. And do think about what's important to you, you know? What's important, and that may change. Some people want to work, make a lot of money. Some people want to just have, you know, a predictable schedule so they can, you know, do their jazz music at night, whatever it is, you know. But think through what's important, and then make that for center in your negotiation, because if you don't, people will squeeze you. They'll just squeeze you. And that is partially why I think there's been a lot of burnout. People haven't been doing better enough protection of themselves and self-care. They don't think about it until they're struggling. So,
okay.
Anyway.
Great. Well, if there's any resources that you can share with us, I can put them in the show notes.
Okay.
Make sure that I'm sure there's going to be questions and because, again, I think there's a learning curve for many of us who've never entered into that. And even if you have, there's still a lot of learning because it's a new world, as you said earlier. The landscape of healthcare has changed, and things are very much contractual and have to be addressed and understood before signing. So, Linda, thank you so much for this time. Thank you for what you're doing in Yakima. Thank you for the investment you're making in these trainees' lives, for your the ways that you have served and God and being used by God and bringing your faith into healthcare and medicine. So Dr. Linda Reedy Seaman, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on this episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. God bless.
Thank you so much. Yes, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is nonpartisan and does not endorse candidates or political parties for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members.